Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the Charlton Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the SE7 podcast, Paul Sullivan, Martin Adkins and Ollie Cook, and no Rob Sullivan tonight. And I'm very worried that he was the man with all the optimism. He was planning for the Premier League. He was talking about the playoffs. As soon as it's all gone wrong, he's not one of those fans. He's gone on a missing. Yeah, I certainly hope not. Yeah, I'm going to put in a message out. MIA is Rob, and I will come find you. And Rob, you will be getting dragged back to the studio. But tonight we will be talking all about that disappointing defeat, frustrating defeat against Wigan on the weekend, 2-0. And life in the Championship started so well for the Addicts, didn't it? 6 games unbeaten. We were all getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. We wanted 7-9 points from September. There is only a possible 3 available now, and it's not going to get any easier because it is against Leeds. We'll be talking to Mickey Kerr, a Leeds fan, a little bit later to preview that game. And then it's not all doom or gloom. There is some positivity on this show, as there always is, not just when we talk about Paul's tree books, but we're delighted to say that Jason Morgan, MBE, and the CEO of CAFC Trust will be joining us. He set up that community programme at Charlton in 1992, and it will be a real delight for us to ask him some questions and find out everything about the Trust. But let's start at the top. We'll try to keep it short and sweet, because it's not very sweet, but it was a terrible defeat to Wigan on the weekend. Paul, I'll start with you as you are back. I'm sure you went. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, it was dreadful, actually. The moment you walk into that stadium, the DW Stadium, it sort of gives you a bit of a downer, because I said to the steward, you know, can you sit anywhere? And he, I mean, basically you can have a stand to yourself.
Yeah.
And I decided to sort of just put myself up right in the top corner and to sort of look down and have a sort of a different perspective. And yeah, it just sort of has a negative effect on you, that ground. And I mean, the Wigan fans are very quiet on the whole. And
apart from their little band to the left of us.
Yeah, I just think
Wigan fans, just being a bit generous, they don't have many.
No, no. It's a rugby town, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be fair. But yeah, they just sort of nullify you. And I just think part of their tactics is they just send you to sleep. And they certainly did that to Charlton on Saturday, yeah. But yeah, it was, as Lee Bowyer said, it was one of the most disappointing first half performances seen for a very long time. We were just so flat, just couldn't get going. Obviously had a bit of a shake up in the second half. 2 dreadful goals to concede. Only had really good chances towards the end. Maybe a consolation goal could have come.
Yeah, I missed that. I was in the pub by then. But
oh, yeah.
You'd given up, Mark?
Yeah, 80 minutes I was gone. I knew nothing was happening. Me and the lad said, come on, let's go and have a pint. You know, it's just,
that
you
was
know.
It, threw yeah, in the towel.
Yeah, we just threw the towel. And it was the first half, I said it to the lads in the ground. I said, that's the worst we've played under Lee Bowyer. It was.
Well, he said it himself, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said it at half time, and we just didn't get going. I mean, Naby Sarr 4 years ago is back, the one that we first signed and no one liked. He's not good enough for the Championship at the moment. You know, Kiefer Moore literally battered him for 90 minutes and it showed, you know. And we're just a little bit disjointed in places, you know. We've got a centre-back playing right-back. It's just, yeah, we'll come back again. We'll be back.
It was a disappointing performance. We can put it down to a bad day at the office. I know we've done that last week, but in the Championship, these games are going to be happening, because Charlton, we hope for the rest of the season, won't be that poor. This has been quite rare, especially if we look at the calendar year as a whole. Charlton haven't played this badly in a long, long time. Wigan, you know, they're doing okay at the minute. They've turned it round. You know, at home, they can be better. They beat Cardiff on the opening day. But how disappointing and unexpected was this performance, Ollie? Because, like we said, we don't expect Charlton to play this way. We know the Championship's going to be tough, but they just completely weren't at the races, were they?
Yeah, no, it is a bit surprising. When we came into this run of 3 games, I said we're going to get 9 points, because the way we were playing was so good. And we're not used to losing at the moment, are we?
No.
But one thing did change, which obviously was the injury to Lyle Taylor, which is, I think, really concerning, that one player being out of the team can make such a difference. Because we were discussing it a little bit outside that it's more than just his goals, but what he does off the ball, the runs, he takes defenders with him. And you just don't see that with our strikers at the moment. And it's just something he's got to give, because relying on one player like that's dangerous. And because when he's out of the team, we just don't turn up. And you saw that at Wigan.
I think I said it last week to you, and I said it outside, is Hemed, you know, he's got a good track record, but he plays the game as a centre forward in between the 18-yard box. And we're so used to Taylor going out wide, going in.
Yeah, so mobile.
You know, he'll come short. You know, Johnny Williams and Conor Gallagher, as soon as Taylor goes short, them two are on. They're gone. They're on their bike. They're right in behind him. Hemed don't do that. And that's,
affects the system, don't it?
If we're going to play Hemed, and he will start against Leeds, there's no way he's going to not play with that experience that he's got. If we're going to play him, we've got to get a better system. Or he needs someone up with him. He can't play up on his own.
We mentioned it was poor defending for the goal. I just want to quickly talk about the Darren Pratley incident, because what we've said, and you know, certainly I've said on the last few weeks, isn't it great to have that wise head, you know, someone, because there is a lot of lone players, there is a lot of youth, someone, you know, we said he does the dirty work without using that word, you know, someone just to keep things ticking over. The work that, let's rephrase it, is that might not get all the plaudits, but you know, he's there, he's around, he's just keeping his team ticking over. He had a moment of madness on the weekend. What was all that about, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it was bad sportsmanship by Wigan, because I think it was Cullen who took a knock.
He did,
and Wigan just didn't give the ball back and tried to create an opening. And Pratley was rightly incensed. Probably took it a little bit too far, because I think he was doing all sorts behind the referee's back.
He was quite lucky.
He grabbed the geezer by the collar, didn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the ground, I must admit, I said the lad's always going.
Yeah, that's
what I thought. I thought he was going, but, you know, ref didn't see it. Couldn't have done.
But I'm sure, you know.
Crafty gamesmanship grabbed him.
Well, that's the experience, isn't it?
That's the experience. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
I mean, Lee Bowie was also incensed on the touchline there. I mean, it was, it was just one of those situations. Poor sportsmanship. And our opponents on Saturday, of course, Leeds, have just been given a fair play award, which is amazing when you think of what they've done in the past.
Unbelievably, the first 90 clubs that won that turned it down and couldn't make the trip. So it was nice for Leeds to get that as a consolation.
The thing is, just quickly, on that, it looked like the players had decided, oh yeah, we'll give it back, and then the ball was bounced and off he went, wasn't it? It was a bit funny.
It was a bit funny. We have to talk about it. I know, again, it's a running theme. What about Dylan Phillips in the goal? Because I felt like a poor mistake there. He should have done better.
I'm not sure.
Am I being harsh, Mark?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I can't see him at fault for any of the goals.
No.
Really?
No.
I think the fault for the first goal, Charlie, was possibly Ossie Largar. He didn't pick up Dunkley coming in to allow a centre-half to sort of come in like
The way I saw it was Conor Gallagher sort of like ran across the centre-half, which means Ossie Largar just couldn't get to him. Mm. And then, you know, and then the second one, there was two or three players could have taken Dunkley out, and the ball was straight at Phillips. I mean, God, blimey.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, you expect that was a fair old wallop.
I'm talking to the second one, not the first one, but the second one, I don't know, maybe I am being harsh. I've watched it a few times, and every time maybe I know he's coming, and I don't know. Without not wanting to be harsh, of course.
No, but I mean, the crime was to be done once at a set piece, where normally we are so good and so organised, and maybe this is, we were missing Jason Pearce big time on Saturday, because he would have organised us a lot better, I think. But to be done again on a corner by a centre-half who's not really known to put the goals in was criminal,
well,
wasn't
he? He just showed a lot of desire, the fella, didn't he? You've got to give him a bit of credit for that.
Mm.
Well, let's talk about Jason Pearce, because he's claiming that he's fit and yet he didn't start. Is there something else going on here? Is there something behind the scenes we don't really know about, Ollie?
I don't know about that. Maybe he's just trying to keep him fit for the Leeds game. Obviously, being, I'd say, one of our strongest centre-backs we've got, and real influence on the pitch. That's someone we're going to need against a team like Leeds, who are really strong. Maybe just didn't want to pick up a knock or anything at Wigan. But yeah, we did miss him, and he would have been a real influence there at Wigan, and it really showed on the day.
I remember last season, Lee Bowyer got caught out. He was very careful about overplaying players, so I think he's always got this in his mind. So he's just probably protecting Jason Pearce, because he's looking at the bigger picture, and he's already hinted that with these three games coming up, Leeds, Swansea and Fulham, he's getting possibly Adam Matthews ready to fill in for Chris Solly for one of the games at least.
He's got to come in for Saturday for me.
Do you think?
Solly's not fit, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
If Solly's not fit, then I'd play
Matthews.
Well,
Solly, I think, be fit, but is he capable of dealing with the Leeds threat? That's the other issue.
Well, there are three tough games coming up, Leeds, Swansea, Fulham. We won't ask for three predictions like we did with this three because maybe that was the wrong thing to do. But with that, it sounds like asking for a knee-jerk reaction because it is two games and it is eight games in what is a 46-game season. But are you now just thinking, this is the Championship roller coaster? We're going to go on a few games where we'll get a few wins and draws and we'll have a few defeats. Or are you worried from what you've seen in the last two games, this is a bit of a slippery slope and things can rapidly decline quite quickly?
If we're going to go to last season, you know, at the beginning of the season, we had a couple of little spells, you know, and then in January, and then we come back from it. Bowyer won't be happy with what's happened. We'll get rid of that now. We've done that. Let's go on to the next one. And he's going to be up for it because it's Leeds.
Yeah.
You know, the crowd are going to be up for it because it's Leeds. You know, dirty Leeds, as everyone calls them. They're coming down. It's going to be a big crowd. It's going to be 22, 23,000. You know, so, and with our record in the big games against the teams near the top, we always turn up. So I think it's going to be an interesting game on Saturday for me.
Oh, it is going to be an interesting game. We haven't even got to the preview bit yet. But Ollie, do you agree with that? You're not starting to not temper those expectations, but change things now. This is where we've sort of the root of the season has really begun.
Yeah, I've definitely stopped saying we're going to go up. But,
but where's Rob when you need him?
But yeah, these last two games, these things happen. Like Bowen was a bad day at the office. We didn't turn up at Wigan. These things do happen. But knowing Lee Bowyer, knowing who he is, he'll come back. He'll have a go at the team. He'll let them know exactly what he thinks. But he's a winner. He's got such a desire about him that we're going to bounce back from this. I have confidence in him.
I think, Paul, obviously, because we didn't get to speak to you last week, the manner of defeats was so different because we say bad day at the office and it was against Wigan, but the Birmingham one wasn't really a bad day at the office. Cheltenham were just really unlucky, weren't they? And there's something you can take from that. You will have bad days at the office. I don't think both were, though.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to your original point, how I was feeling after the Wigan game, came off that coach and I was talking to Kevin Nolan. And I'm a typical fan. I was really down after that defeat and I'm thinking the worst. Oh, God, we can't do it without Lyle Taylor. And with these really horrible games coming up, you know, where are we going to get any points? But as the week goes on, you start being more reflective. And I just think we've got the best manager in the country. I just love Lee Bowyer.
No,
I do. I think he's fantastic.
Take that, Guardiola.
Exactly. And I love Pep. I really do love Pep. It's one of my other books, by the way.
And you must really love Bowyer if you really love Pep.
Yeah, I've just got so much time for Lee Bowyer. He's just done so much with the backdrop of what's gone on at this club, and we really should take our hats off for his achievements. And so when you think about it in that respect, I've still got great hope going into these really tough games.
Well, there are some tough games coming up. But talking about the backdrop of the club, it's not all doom and gloom here. We're going on to the positive because next we're being joined by an MBE. Jason Morgan from the CAFC Trust is joining us. And if you want to ask Jason a question, please do call us 0208 7020 558 or tweet us at Love Sport Radio or tweet the SE7 podcast. Jason Morgan is on next.
Love Sport.
You are listening to the Cheltenham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the SE7 podcast. Paul Sullivan, Martin Atkins and Ollie Cook. We were just talking about that disappointing defeat on the weekend to Wigan. 2-0 there, two defeats on the trot, Wigan and Birmingham, hoping to turn it around against Leeds this weekend. Super clash. We'll be talking to Mickey Kerr. But we've got someone now we are absolutely delighted to get on the phone. A real pleasure to have you join us, Jason Morgan, MBE and CEO of the CAFC Trust. Jason, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. Can you tell us, to start us off, just how you even came to starting up the community program at Cheltenham Athletic in 1992?
Evening, guys. No, it's a pleasure.
Evening, Jason.
Evening, all. 1992. Yeah. My background is local authority, and I worked at Tottenham Haringey for quite a few years. And my dad was at West Ham running the community programme there. So I had an opportunity, I went for an interview there, was unsuccessful. And that's when the relationship between PFA and Football Club, Professional Football Association, and money that was going into clubs to set community programmes up. And I was unsuccessful in that interview. And then 6 months later, Charlton phoned me, and there was a job there. I went for the interview. Bless him, a gentleman called Arnie Warren, Herbs and Gritty. And as they say, the rest is history. So, yeah, August 1992 it was.
Yeah, hi, Jason. I mean, obviously, since 1992, it's just massively evolved. I think it's been calculated that the value of your work in education, employment, health and reducing crime is something about the £31 million mark. I mean, that's a major impact that you're injecting into the community. Human nature tends to focus on the negative. That's really a positive, isn't it, Jason?
Yeah, it is, and it's evolved over the years. I mean, I've been there, you know, 27 years, and that social value was important to do. I think we were guilty of sort of like spurting out big numbers around 10,000 kids a week and how many staff we appointed. And it's important, especially this day and age, to demonstrate the social value. And we're commissioned to run a lot of the council services, so it's the kind of language that they need to hear. You know, and if you're taking young people on a journey into positive activity, and especially from some of the challenging backgrounds some young people unfortunately come from, then, you know, there's a value that we need to put on that, and we need to demonstrate the value. And you know, I've talked about this before, clubs have got a huge responsibility, you know, being outward facing and addressing social issues. And I think we're quite good at it. You know, we've got a great relationship with Greenwich, Royal Borough of Greenwich and Bexley and pushing into Kent. And I think we've evolved over the years. You know, back in 92, for probably about the past 8-10 years, it was traditional football in the community, schools and football coaching. And probably if you ask anyone, that's what they know, because, you know, put kids on our courses, and yet my son or daughter, you know, is trained by Charlton Community Trust staff in schools or whatever. But I think we sort of like grew up 10, 12 years on and realised, you know, that we could have conversations with council colleagues and say, yep, you know, we can do that. You know, issues around drugs and crime and vandalism and antisocial behaviour. And we just knew that we had the kind of skill set of staff to address some of those social issues. And thankfully, that's how it's grown over the years.
Hi, Jason. You know, you and the Trust have done some really amazing projects over the years, from things like you know, street violence ruined lives, also your work abroad in Africa and things like that. There's a lot of things that you've been doing for the community. Is there anything you're particularly proud of? Anything that stands out to you as like a, you know, a really special project for you?
Well, internationally, South Africa, we did 10 years working in townships, was just amazing, unbelievable. 3 years in Johannesburg, 3 years in Cape Town, and then we went to Durban, and then we went back during the World Cup. And just to work, you know, in townships where there's that kind of poverty. And I just had the opportunity and the pleasure to take a lot of staff across there. And Bob Boulder, Paul Elliott was a trustee, Paul Mortimer came across with me, I took Martin Simons over there, Sky came over there and covered the work that we were doing. I'm immensely proud, and I think our work over there, well, I know our work was depicted in, unfortunately, England, you know, the big book, the 2018 big book on work overseas. Domestically, probably the street violence. You know, we had a meeting on Friday. One of the most difficult phone calls I've had to make. You know, Sally and Colin Knox lost their son, Rob, from a stabbing 11 years ago. And, you know, Charlton as a club and us as a community trust has always been proactive, always understood, like I said, our responsibility. And to phone up those parents and say, look, as a club, we want to do something. And not just a one-off. You know, I think that's what's pleased me over the years about a lot of work that we've done. It's not a flash in the pan. You know, the street violence ruined lives has gone on for 11 years now. And we've just relaunched our strategy. We had our first steering committee, which Sally's part of on Friday. But to actually phone Colin and Sally and say, look, we want to do a game in Rob's memory and we want to keep doing that. And you guys might remember Charlton Millwall, we took the sponsor's name off the front of the shirt and put the street violence logo on it. And that reached an audience of, I think, 9 million people, that message. But then it was more important about the work that we were doing in schools and the education. And we've just taken them, a lad that's come out of prison that was running county lines as one of our mentors, So again, you know, some of the challenging work that we're doing, you know, Sally ended up working for us as a life coach and telling the story of that night, you know, and obviously sadly what happened to Rob. So, you know, that was a tough project, a tough phone call, but immensely proud of the difference we've made over 11 years and to keep that going and the impact. I think at one stage there was a reduction in knife crime and serious youth violence, about 40% in Greenwich. So, you know, we can't take sole claim for that, but we contributed to that with other stakeholders.
Yeah, definitely. And this week, Jason, I mean, it was fantastic to hear about the announcement of the Magnificent Seven, the Seven Ambassadors. So we've got seven players who are championing various works in the community. Can you just talk us through a little bit about that?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, the start, really, the relationship I've had with the manager, and the support that they've always given us as a community programme, and the players. And it's just, I mean, we're based at the training ground, so that helps immensely. And a great relationship with Lee Bowyer, a great relationship with Tracy Leeburn, and obviously managers previously. And managers that have come into the club understanding, you know, what we are as a club and a community programme and as a family club. Mm-hmm. And luckily, we've always had players. So the Magnificent Seven, we did something a couple of years ago where we had the Magnificent Seven. So we've got seven strands and seven players to support those seven strands. And it's just something that's evolved. I think we had, when we did the Upbeats swim, you know, the Down syndrome team, which the fans have taken to heart, not only the players that were in the pool swimming against the Upbeats, but I think all in all, we had about 10 or 11 players turn up at the David Lloyd and support the guys and support the programme. So we've just been immensely fortunate and you know, very supportive by the players. And obviously that comes from the top, from the manager. So, the relaunch of Magnificent Seven. So don't ask me who they are. But, I know they're guys.
I've got them here if you want to know them.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, the guys are brilliant and they, you know, they do come along. And it's not just lip service. That you know, they do want to understand the projects and programmes so that when they are speaking to young people or in front of the press, They want to know the programmes that they're supporting, which is nice.
And obviously, I mean, Charlton are really well known for their work in the community. They're right up there. But do you know off the top of your head, Jason, I mean, what percentage of the 92 clubs, have most of them got community trusts? Are they at the sort of same level as us, or is it quite thin on the ground with a lot of other clubs?
No, a lot of colleagues up and down the country. So obviously, the Premier League community clubs and the Football League and the National League. So, you know, we've moved away from the PFA. So obviously we sit under the Football League Trust with some of our Premier League colleagues today, Premier League Trust. So, yeah, there's some amazing work, some fantastic projects and programmes going on. Where do we sit? Probably right up there. So I've got given some financial figures recently, and I think for about the fifth year running, we've turned over 5 million. So I think it's 5.3 million last year.
Fantastic.
So only Chelsea
turned
over higher than that. But, you know, don't get me wrong, I've got a lot of respect for colleagues, and there's some great work. And sometimes some of the smaller clubs, you know, that probably have not got a big infrastructure, but are doing some great projects. And that's recognised, you know, the Football League Trust Awards. And we're talking about sort of like recognising a project of the year. And I know that they break it down. So I'm fortunate enough to know a lot of the colleagues because I've been here a long time, up and down the country, some great work. But yeah, no, we're up there. We're up there doing okay, actually.
Jason, very quickly, because obviously I want to ask you about the footballing side of things as well. How impressed have you been with Charlton this season? Barring the last two games, you're making a good start to the Championship season. They're back there. Are you impressed so far?
Yeah, I mean, you can see it. I mean, the whole vibe and the buzz around the place, you know, the last couple of seasons has been brilliant, and that's credit to Lee and the team. You know, and it can be tough. You know, we've had highs and lows at Charlton all over the years. You guys know that, but there's a buzz around the place, and Lee's brought that in, and I'm fortunate enough to be there and see that. You know, and I knew Lee when he was a player, when he was a young lad, kind of thing under Alan Kirbishley, and he's a similar kind of manager. He understands his responsibility not just for the team but for the club. You know what he does around the stadium and what he does around the place. Is notable. So as an example, you know, the other day. I think it was actually the training sessions leading up to the playoff games. And the upbeat Down syndrome team always train in the dome on a Saturday morning. And he just took himself over there. He just asked if they were in there. We didn't prompt it. It was nothing that we said, look, if you get a chance, can you go over there? He wanted to do it. He asked if the upbeats were in the dome. And he went over there and he spent three quarters of an hour playing with the lads and speaking to the parents. And, you know, they were properly made up. And he didn't have to do that. And, you know, I just think he's a, you know, he's a proper Charlton guy and, you know, understands his responsibilities and has probably seen the club, you know, over the years. And, no, he's the right manager for us at the moment. And long may it continue because the success is nice. We're enjoying it at the moment.
And so you should, Jason. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time. We know you're really busy. Hopefully, we may get to speak to you at another point later on in the season. Thank you so much for joining us. Jason Morgan there, MBE, and the CEO of the CAFC Trust. Great to have him on. Next, though, we're going to be turning our attentions to Lee Bowyer and that article that came out this week and everything that was going on. And it was such a touching story that Jason said about him there. We're going to be talking all about the man next.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Charlton Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the SE7 podcast, Paul Sullivan, Martin Atkins and Ollie Cook. And we were just also joined by MBE, Jason Morgan, the CEO of the CAFC Trust. Really good to hear from him. Something that's been going since 1992 and it is so successful. Some really good anecdotes from Jason there. We'd love to hear more about him again later on. We'll get him on at another time. But now, though, someone who's just as important to this show. We've had a call into the studio. Ahmed has joined us. Ahmed, not the greatest result on the weekend. What were your thoughts?
My thoughts on hi everyone.
Hi,
my
Ahmed.
On the Birmingham and Wigan games and the results and performances, I fear that our first bad run of the season is imminent, particularly without Lyle. Where are the goals coming from? I mean, our conversion rate of chances created to goal scores is extremely low without Lyle.
Are we a one-man team, Ahmed?
It's looking like that at the moment. In those two games, we were toothless up front.
I think Kevin Nolan suggested in his report this week that we're not a one-man team, but we could be. It could be suggested we're a one-man attack.
Well, I saw enough.
Yeah,
of...
I'd go along with that. That's a fair assessment. Yeah.
Well, I said I saw enough of Macaulay Bond in the 10-15, or maybe a bit longer than that on Saturday, to say that he could. We could give him another 20 minutes against Leeds, but he'll start with Hemed again on Saturday, definitely.
I think possibly he might be brave and go with Bon and Aniki, because I felt when those two came on, there was a lot more mobility,
yeah,
wasn't there?
Without a doubt, yeah.
And it'd be nice just for Bon to be unleashed and just surprise a few people and
why not
pop in some goals.
Well, Paul, you were saying that you think that Bon's like, he's a bit worried about playing the Championship. He's not sure if he can make that step up. And if he gets rid of that, he might be quite a decent striker for us.
Yeah, I don't know if you agree, Ahmed. Do you remember sort of earlier in the season, I think Bond came out with a statement saying he was not ready for the Championship. And I don't think he should have said that. So basically, you've got to be brave. You've got to be ready to go. I'm sure that in training, Lee's put in the likes of Bond through, you know, great intensity, and he's got to be ready to go on. And he came on Saturday, and I felt he was all right. He was an improvement definitely on Hemed, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but maybe also it's a confidence issue for him, as you're saying. He's thinking he's under a lot of pressure. He's in a league, two or three leagues higher than what he's played before. Maybe he himself doesn't feel confident about playing in the side.
He's only got to look at someone like, say, not comparing him to Jamie Vardy, but just look at what Jamie Vardy's done. It's similar sort of like timeline, isn't it? You know, from the same sort of like division, gone up divisions. So why not?
I mean, I do agree with you. I mean, he does need to rotate what striking options he's got, definitely. And I mean, and his tactical play and usage of that. I mean, Bowyer likes to play two up front. So yeah, I mean, Bon and Anike possibly, or maybe Hemed and Anike, or you know, you have at least one of them on the bench, and it gives you a chance to rotate even during the game. But I got a feeling at the moment that our bad run is about to start. Unfortunately, the first one.
Well, the thing is, Ahmed, we've got to work with what we've got. I reckon Taylor could be out at least till sort of mid-November. So we've got to come up with some answers and fast. So
I don't disagree with that. Yeah. I think we're all singing from the same hymn sheet about what his options are. But apart from those options, he hasn't got anything else.
But just to give us a sort of a strand of positivity, I was looking at Hemed's record for Brighton. So in his 3-4 seasons, I mean, it was a good return. I think he scored 30-odd goals in 90 appearances. If you look at his international career, he scored 17 goals in 38 appearances. So he has done it in the Championship. And maybe it's just a case of his fitness and sharpness that needs to come on. So we might have to give him that little bit of time.
No, I think that's a well-made observation. I mean, I hope you're right. I don't like to talk negatively about the team, but it is struggling at the moment.
Ahmed, we really appreciate you calling into the studio. We look forward to it every week. Ahmed there, the traditional caller, he calls us every week and he always gives us some brilliant insight. Let's talk about the Lee Bowyer article now, because there was one in the week in the Daily Mail. Martin, you sent it over to me and I was really excited to read it. And I've got to admit, you know, my soft spot is no longer a soft spot for Lee Bowyer, because it seems to be getting ever so slightly bigger every time, because I'm really just reading about the man, you know, hearing the things that were said in the article. Harry talks, he's so open, he's so transparent about the club, he's genuine, you can hear his passion for the club, for the area. And not only that, we speak to Jason Morgan then, who tells that brilliant story at the end. He knows what it means to the community, giving stuff back. Martin, what did you make of the article?
Well, first off, you know, that's why we all love him as the fans, because he talks to us as fans, you know, as a fan himself, sort of thing.
He gets it.
He does get it, you know, and he doesn't... I nearly swore then. He doesn't give us a talk rubbish, you know what I mean? Like some managers, like we had Cole Robinson before, he used to come out with some rubbish, didn't he, you know?
Yeah.
And be a bit condescending towards the fans, whereas Bo, you don't. But, you know, but you also have that little undercurrent of... You know, if I don't get a decent deal where I'm on my toes, I deserve one, and he damn well does deserve one as well, by the way. You know, even with this last couple of defeats, you know, he should be on a 3-year contract without a doubt to give us that stability. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And as you say, he was quick to point that out. Very truthful and open. And that's a message to Roland now, that not only him, but his staff as well seems to... They've been shortchanged. They haven't really got lengthy contracts. I mean, this... what Roland's hiding behind, you know, I don't want to give Lee an extended contract because that wouldn't be fair on prospective buyers to tie them up for long periods of time. I'm not having that.
No,
surely a prospective buyer would love to see... and have someone like Lee Bowyer who's on a 3 or 5 year contract, because Lee's got nothing to prove.
Listen,
we need stability.
If someone's going to come in and spend 40 million or whatever they pay for our club to buy out Lee Bowyer's contract, get rid of him if they don't want him, it's going to be peanuts, isn't it? So I don't...
Yeah, and the whole scheme
makes sense.
Yeah, it's a very valid point. Let's talk at some of the bullet points from that article. He said, you know, he wants to build foundations, lay foundations, and you can't on a 1 year contract. You know, that contract sort of signals to him that they are only ever thinking in the short term. How can he think the long term goal for Cholton when there is no security or stability with that 1 year contract? And he almost said, he echoed another manager. He said, I want to do a Kurbishley.
Yeah.
He said, my kids are in the area, I'm settled in the area, I want to stay here, I'm very happy here. They're not providing me with that contract to do that.
And he also came out with, sorry Ollie, came out with that little undercurrent. He said, well, I weren't really expecting it, I was just going to go and work on my carp farm.
Yeah.
So he's saying to Roland, look, if you don't give me a contract, I'll just go do a bit of fishing again, I don't care.
Well, yeah, he's what he's done so far, he's built a strong team, a start of a strong team. He can work with it over time, develop players. Macaulay Bond's a good example. He's brought him in as like a project to work towards becoming a top striker in the league. He believes he can do that if he works with him. But the ownership's not giving him the ability to do these projects that he wants to see through. He's got infrastructure in place that shows that he wants to stay for a while. He wants to grow in the club, but with just 1 year at a time. He doesn't know if he's going to be given that. And, you know, the loyalty he's shown to the club, he needs to have it back from the owners, basically what he said. And, it's just strange that it's such short-term thinking from Roland de Châtelet, who apparently is a businessman.
The point that Lee made was that, you know, when he's only got a short-term contract and then he's got to try and, as he did in the summer, he brought about 12, 13 players in and to persuade them to get on board with what they're trying to do at Charlton. But maybe in the back of their mind thinking, well, are you going to be around long enough? So that's the point he's making. And getting back to the point you made about Bond, I mean, this is where Lee's true strengths lie. What he's so good at is taking players who might be described as fairly ordinary, but he can really improve them.
Well, that's what I wanted to mention, because, you know, he said we have good relationships with West Ham, Chelsea, Arsenal. They signed Bilic last year. He said he went for $10 million this year to Derby. He said he wouldn't have gone for that last year. He got the games at Cholton. He got the first team experience. He was a star in that, you know, in that late run when you did go through via the playoffs. We know how good he was in those playoffs. That was what got him the move. He said, you know, maybe Arsenal could have maybe gave them a little bit of the cash or got a little bit of that deal. But it just shows you, it speaks to the highlight of what he can do with the younger players.
Yeah, and now Charlton got a reputation of, like, you can send a youth
player. We're going to develop your players properly.
Yeah, and they absolutely do. You've looked back over the last few years, Francis Coughlin's a good example of that. Mm-hmm. Jay De Silva as well, who came here. Absolutely. Had a great time. He's been sold to Bristol City now. Yeah, we've got a long history of being able to do this, and he really backs that and shows that we can really develop players. It'd be a crime to not let him continue doing that.
It is. It is almost criminal, because, you know, owners are crying out for someone, a manager who can do all the number of things we've just mentioned and knows the club inside out and gets it, you know, speaks to the club as fans. These people, you know, they don't come around every so often. No. You know, they're not hanging around on street corners. Cholton have one, and they're in danger of not giving him that contract. You know, he also mentioned in the article, he said he knows everyone here. You know, he said the groundsman is still there, Chris Parks. He said his door's just down the road, like the corridor from mine. It's... everything seems to be pointing in the way of let's give him a longer contract. Everyone can see it apart from the owner.
Listen, at this point in time, we have got a golden opportunity, because I think someone like Lee Bowyer would, with the right backing, and if he's rewarded correctly, he can take this club a long, long way. I think they could go into the Premiership with Lee and even be really successful in the Premiership over the long term. It's just so exciting. But there's one man who's stopping that, and it's over to you, Roland, because this is a golden opportunity. Either sell the club as quickly as possible and let someone else come in.
Well, you know, you're listening.
And I would imagine it makes perfect sense for anyone who's coming in would see the potential that Lee's got. Or if you're going to stick around, Roland, back him.
Roland, Cholton have a particular set of skills, and we will find you. Please, we need a new owner there, Roland.
We know where you live.
Yeah, we know where you live. Give Lee a new contract. It's all we're asking for. What do you think? Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. Next, we turn our attentions to Lee. I'm delighted to say we'll be joined by Mickey Kerr.
Love Sport.
That's right. It's time for the opposition view on Love Sport Radio. You are listening to the Cholton Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the SE7 podcast. Paul Sullivan, Martin Adkins and Ollie Cook. It's now time for us to turn our attention to the weekend, because it is a massive clash. It's Cholton versus Leeds. It's a big one, especially when we were hoping for 7 or 9 points. We have to come away with a 3. Not in the greatest form, Cholton, but... can they turn it around on the weekend? Well, Leeds will obviously think otherwise. And I'm delighted to say we've been joined on the phone by Mickey Kerr. Mickey, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. How confident are you going into the weekend's game?
Evening, gents.
Good evening.
Really confident. Really confident. I think Leeds United are playing the best football in the Championship at the minute. And you were talking about 9 points earlier. We've dropped 7 out of our last 9 points at home, which sounds awful. But we've lost games where the opposition's had one shot on target. We drew against Forest, they had one shot on target off a corner. We are dominating teams in our away form. It's incredible. So you're up against it, lads, I have to say, at the weekend.
Bring it on.
Yeah. Listen, I can guarantee one thing, right? We will have more chances. And we will concede fewer chances. I mean, we will get the most chances in the league this year and concede the fewest. But our problem is that's the finishing. We haven't got the personnel, but Bamford, he needs 4 to 5 chances. He's that type of striker. It's really frustrating to watch. But the way we're playing, and Marcelo Bielsa, I mean, crikey, he's honestly, like, it's incredible. He's incredible. Our problem is finishing. I mean, we've been a bit unlucky, but we're still top of the league and we've thrown away so many points from dominated football games. But away from home is better for us at the minute, because when teams sit in, we struggle. But when teams can have a go, and I'm sure you will do at Charlton at home, you know, the fans will want a game and they'll want to see the team attacking. And that plays into our hands a little bit, because we can get more space in behind, because we need a bit of space, because we're not that good up top, if I'm honest.
Oh, well, I just kind of want to ask you a little bit about Leeds over the last few years in general, Mickey, because you've been one of the strongest teams in the league consistently, but haven't been promoted. And what would you put that down to? Because it always comes close, like in the playoffs or just outside the automatic. Well, why has it not never been, you know, getting back to the Premier League where Leeds should be?
Oh, well, to be fair, we've been terrible for the last 15 years. It's been similar to Charlton, really. You know, we've kind of like, I think you've been down League One as well, haven't you, in the last 10, 15 years?
Well, their last season, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, you know, you're a big club, you're a big enough club. And Leeds United are a huge club. And we've not really been knocking on the door for a long time. We've kind of been, you know, the season's kind of done by March, you know what I mean? It's been a bit like that. And can we make sixth place? But last year, we were top of the league. We were dominating for a long time. It all fell apart last 10 games. It was heartbreaking, really. The reason it fell apart, in my opinion, is football. I just don't think the team have got... You know when your team gets over the line, it wins when it shouldn't win. We haven't got those players. And that's where we struggled. I think playing out of the mould, you know, it's 37,000 people. And it's a loud atmosphere. You've got, and these players are not used to it. You know, they're not Premier League players, a lot of them. So I think sometimes they just bottle it. And we've been, I mean, when you look at the stats, we are so dominating. We're so dominating, it's incredible. So that for me, it's bottle. I think we've just not had the ball. And if we don't go up this year, I think it's the same thing.
So, I mean, Mickey, do you really think, and do the Leeds fans honestly believe that this is the season that you're going to do it and start renewing hostilities against the likes of Man United, Liverpool, and do you remember the games you used to have against Chelsea back in the day? Is this the season where you're definitely going to do it? Because let's face it, one of your Achilles heels is, as you mentioned at the top of your coming on, was that you're giving away these silly goals, albeit at home. I mean, you seem pretty confident coming to away games. But and also the capitulation last season to Derby in the playoffs. Are you bottlers at the end of the day?
Yeah, well, the capitulation, well, not as much as Derby, I mean, crikey. I'm not just about the recent events, but they've balled every playoff, haven't they? But with the capitulation started before Derby, we were never going to go up. When you finish third, you're at the top of the league, and you know for a long time you're slipping to third. It's never going to happen. The team that finishes third rarely goes up. So the capitulation is now Wigan. We've been lost to 10 man Wigan at home. We won them up. I think we had 67 crosses in the game. It was just ridiculous. So the capitulation is now, it was 10 games in, and 10 games from the end, sorry. And I think, yeah, the worry is that we are, for me, is that we are bottlers. It really is.
I can't believe I said that to you, Mickey.
that is my fear. It really is, because we will, I can guarantee, I'll come on next time, you lads are doing this, and we will have the most chances. We will create the most chances, and we'll come save the fewest chances. I bet my house on that this season. I mean, not just the title game or any other game, throughout the whole season. That's what happened last year. We created those chances, we conceded the fewest, but we didn't go up. We finished third. It's not good enough. And if we finish third, fourth, fifth or sixth again, we ain't going up. We've got to go up top two, because I think the pressure will get to them. And it's the, you know, the psychologically it's wearing, you know, when you don't get up there. And we, the reason we've been conceding at home is because we've been, you know, when you dominate a game, you're all over them. And then in the 84th minute, you concede the corner and everyone gets a bit nervy. And you can, that's what it's like in the last 10 minutes. Without two goals to the good, then everyone's kind of like, oh, God, here we go again. So it really is, it's a weird atmosphere. It's incredible to watch. And I think, to be fair, Marcelo Bielsa, two seasons in the Championship, it's got to happen. It's really got to happen. My only problem is he doesn't spend money. He just relies on the youth team and... I'm just not sure that we've got the strikers to get out of the league. You know, you need that 20 goal man, don't you? You Dwight Gales and stuff like that. I'm not sure Patrick Bamford's got 20 goals in him. We've got the young lad from Arsenal. Have you heard of him? Eddie Nketiah.
Absolutely. Yeah, how's he getting on?
Yeah.
He's very quick. He said it's new and right. He's got a knack for scoring goals.
He looks like a talent.
Yeah, he really does. I'm really, really excited about him. Problem is, he can't get in the team because we play one striker and Bielsa's kind of like system revolves around the big lad up top. So, and he's only like, I don't know what he is, five foot nine or something. He's a quick lad on the shoulder. So he's playing Bamford in his place. And a lot of fans are, you know, like, we're thinking, come on, just give this kid a chance because he's got, I think he will score 20 goals. He's one of them players he's just got. He's got a knack of scoring goals, whereas Bamford's going to have Brian Dawson.
Well, hopefully he won't be scoring too many on the weekend, Mickey, but just to press you, what is your score prediction for the weekend?
Oh, I think he'll score because we've been struggling with clean sheets.
Don't try to butter us up and just give us, we think you'll score like you're doing us a big favour.
What'll happen in this one, Jimmy?
It comes to the punchline. Come on, what is it, Mickey? How many are you going to get?
You'll be like, crikey, this kid was right. We are absolutely... You won't have the ball. You'll be struggling to get in our heart. We'll be 2-0 up. You'll score in the 70-odd minute and then you'll be knocking on the door and I think we'll hold on 2-1. 1-2.
2-1, Mickey, an absolute pleasure to talk to you there. Mickey Kerr, comedian and Leeds fan. Well, he's going 2-1. It's now time for prediction in the studio because apparently you'll score. I don't know what else you might, Cholton, might do on the weekend. Paul, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will be definitely tough. And just first and foremost, result aside, I just want a good performance and that will sort of get us back on track. But yeah, I think it's going to be difficult. I'm going 1-3 Leeds.
Oh, 3-1 win for Leeds, Mark.
Go for 1-1.
1-1, good man.
Yeah, I think Mickey's right. I think we'll score. So I think it's going to be 4-0 Charlton.
Hey! And that is why I asked Ollie last. Well, he's going for 4-0 on the weekend. We're hopefully going to turn it around. It is a massive clash on the weekend. Cholton versus Leeds. We said 7 or 9 points this month. We'll desperately take the 3. We may even take 1. Either way, we'll be back next week to talk about it on the Cholton Fan Show every Thursday, 9 till 10. Catch us then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. Thank you.